Welcome to the fourth season of Bus to Talk, the exclusive podcast of Bus to Bust. This recent episode will be recorded all over Germany and Europe, and we will once again feature renowned experts from the bus industry, politicians, and startups. I am Kerstin Kube-Erkens from Messe Berlin, and I'll be on the lookout for news and insights from the bus and mobility scene. To support me, I have Totinia Hörner at my side. She's a freelance moderator focusing on mobility, innovation, and leadership, and supported us already last year during Bus to Bus 2022. Great to have you on board, Totinia.
Thank you very much, Kerstin, and a warm welcome from me as well. Already the fourth season of Bus to Talk. Wow, I'm really impressed, and I do look forward to see many, many new faces, hear stories, and lots of inspiration and new ideas.
And I can promise you, Totinia, we will definitely have a lot of that.
I'm sure we will. I'm very much looking forward to it, Kerstin.
Before we get started, for those who haven't registered yet, please save the date for the next year's edition of Bus to Bus. April 24 to 25th, here in Berlin. And here we go. We wish all our listeners a lot of fun.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Bus to Talk. Unfortunately, my co-podcast host, Kerstin, isn't able to join us today, but please don't worry. I'll guide you through this and ask all relevant questions needed. So sustainability has long ceased to be a trend, but for now, it is a must in every area of our lives. And that is why today we'll be taking a closer look at how sustainability evolved in the mobility industry, evaluating the importance of sustainable product design. From the initial spark of an idea to the final masterpiece, we'll uncover the profound impact that each design choice can have on our environment. All these topics will be discussed today with our dear guest, Rui Marcelino, CEO and founder of the design studio Alma Design. He's a visionary force behind Alma Design and founded his studio dedicated to transport products and interiors in 1997. So this is exactly 26 years ago. I'm glad you joined our podcast today to share your insights with us, Rui.
And good morning. It's a pleasure to be here presentially, at least with my voice. And I'm very glad to participate in this Bus to Bus session. So feel free to launch the questions. I'm here also to participate.
Sounds very good. Thank you so much, Rui, for your time. Let me start out with introducing you. So you're a passionate designer with tremendous expertise in the mobility sector, and you founded your own design studio, Alma Design, and you're now responsible for the studio management and over 700 design projects. So from designing products for industrial machinery, buses, trains, boats, and aircrafts, you kind of do it all. So yet you still have a strong focus on mobility. Rui, tell us, how did that strong focus happen? And when did you figure out that transportation design was the thing you really wanted to commit yourself to?
Well, thank you so much for the question, Totinia. It's kind of funny because this was something I always wanted to do, I think, since I was 6 years old. So it's quite a long time ago. I always like to create and to generate things. But in my opinion, living things like machinery and vehicles are something that are more attractable to me. And so since I started my, let's say, teaching path, I always wanted to create things that had internal life, like mobility products or related aspects. So I think it's something that was almost born with me. And I'm lucky to be working today in this same area.
Sounds very good. So is there one certain or specific thing that fascinates you about the mobility industry, or is it just the movement, the vehicles itself?
Well, I think it's both. It's exactly what you've mentioned, which is the mobility industry. It's about mankind creating things that move and then can move you from A to B, and the capability of people moving from one place to the other, whether to work, whether to meet other people, whether to, let's say, break the boundaries of your geography. I think it's fascinating. The other part is that mobility industry, it's about all industries together, which means you have to relate to everything. And as a designer, I don't like to be closed in a box. I like things that relate with everything, and mobility relates with everything.
Sounds good. And I mean, that's quite pretty much the portfolio of Alma Design, because it seems you do so much and so many great things also. So maybe you tell us a little bit more about the design studio Alma Design. How big is your company? How many people work for you? Because when looking at the things you do, it seems like you do so much. So how many people are involved in it?
It's a funny question, Sutinia. We are presently 14 people, mostly industrial designers. And I believe that more, like you were saying, more than the number of employees or our annual revenue, I believe that the most relevant part is the number of interesting projects we are engaged in, which in my opinion is big and so fascinating. And that's how big I believe we are.
So can you tell us a number of projects, or is it a secret you can't tell?
No, it's not. We don't make the account, I'll say, every time, but last time we reached at this point about 800 and something projects, and we are doing at about an average of 35 projects a year. And with projects, I mean, can be a bus, but can be also a lighter or a pencil. So that counts for one project. So 35 of some very complex, some very simple. But yes, that's a large amount, I would say, for a small studio, yes.
Yes, for 14 people sounds like a lot of work. So I assume you must have really, really qualified people in order to get all those projects done. So
I have a lovely team.
I bet. So what are typical things you and your team do? You said you just mentioned buses or projects, but what other projects are things you do?
Well, basically, as you know, Alma Design works with the clients through all the steps of the design process, you know, regarding new products and new services. But mostly it's in the mobility area and product design area. But I could say that in the mobility area, we are probably related with all kind of transportation systems. So presently, we are working for things like eVTOLs, so electrical aircrafts that take off vertically. We are working for industrial machinery, charging infrastructures. We are working for seats, other components for transportation. We are working for train systems. We are working for vessels, sustainable vessels as well. So I would say that in all areas, road, rail, aeronautic, and let's say maritime, we work on all areas. And beside that, we work on what I call technology intensive projects. And whenever there is a need to make the link between technology and the user and operation needs, that's where the design fits.
Technology intensive products sounds pretty good. And I'll ask you later on a little bit more about it. Maybe you tell us where exactly is your company located, just for all those listening and don't knowing where you are living.
Oh, yes. We are based in Passo de Arcos. It's in the very active municipality of Oeiras. I would call it the Silicon Valley of Portugal. They call it that, which is 15 minutes from Lisbon downtown and about 500 meters from the seaside, which is something that is also inspiring for a design studio, as you might imagine.
Mm-hmm. Sounds really good. Would you recommend the visit?
Oh, well, definitely. And of course, you are all invited to come around. I don't remember anyone that has come around that has regretted coming to visit our place.
That sounds very, very good. Thanks a lot for the invite. I'll take Kerstin with me next time, definitely.
Absolutely.
So you have won numerous design awards and really renowned brands rely on your know-how. I think I've read that the interior design of the Portuguese airline fleet TAP, the new electric buses for Caetano and so much more have been implemented by you and your team. And we really appreciated that. And I mean, since you've already told us how many projects you do per year, what is the maybe unique selling proposition that you offer to your clients? Because I can imagine, okay, there's so many different projects you implement, but why do customers like TAP always come to you and ask you for help when it comes to your products and the design of it?
It's a very interesting question. I think that's, as I explained, you have a lot of engineering studios and you have also design studios existing in the world. I think Alma Design has the capability of joining a little bit of this kind of two worlds, which sometimes don't live together so easily. So we managed quite well to making the bridge between, like I said, what the markets and society need and what the technology can give. Some people are much more focused on technology side, some people more on the market side. I believe Alma Design can make a good bridge on this matter. But also, we have the capability to follow up the projects from project definition, meaning requirements, to what you usually expect from design, which is concept generation, but also developing these designs and bringing it to real life, prototyping and follow up the production of the first units. Also, something that is very interesting is that we follow up our clients through all the process until the product is in the market, and we help our clients to evaluate what we have done together so that in the next time we can make an even better product. Maybe that's why we have clients working with us. I call them partners more than clients, which we have been partnership with for more than 25 years. So this is something we are very proud, which is it's a long-term strategy, a long-term, let's say, work together with Alma and its clients. And I believe that is the strong part of our value proposition.
Definitely, because it sounds like you're not only a design studio only doing, well, let's say only doing product design, but you're also kind of, seems like you're a full service agency, which says, exactly. Okay, we are doing the production design, but also going with our clients even further steps and saying, and reevaluating also, asking, okay, what can we do better next? It sounds really nice.
Absolutely.
So one topic we really wanted to talk about today was sustainability, because we have said you've been already in the mobility sector since 1997, and you have probably a quite holistic view of how this whole sustainability topic has developed over the years. So how would you describe the development of sustainability and especially the demand for it in the mobility sector?
Also an interesting question. And well, I think sustainability now, it's the center and probably the biggest concern we have today. It has always been a topic in the mobility area, you see, because for instance, if you consider a lightweight material and if you consider what it takes to make it lighter, if you save 100 grams in one material, for instance, the consequences you have in fuel consumption, considering the amount of miles it will travel, are enormous. So whenever you think about a small thing inside the product, the consequences are always big in terms of environmental, in terms of energy, in terms of all aspects. And so the demand for sustainability has always been present. Today, it has changed dramatically because I believe everyone has now acknowledged that sustainability is key. And I can tell you that we are working presently on electric ferries, on Alice, which is an electric aircraft, probably the first to fly, electric vertical takeoff and landing aircrafts. The Cobus, the bus for airports, has also has an electric version that we are working it. So everybody is thinking, being OEMs, being operators, in working in a more economical way, being it the implementation of BRT systems and buses on cities, which also requires changing in infrastructures. And the quest for more sustainable solutions has become a boost for innovative products. And of course, therefore, for Alma Design business. I believe we are not working in anything that hasn't got this concern on being more sustainable.
Mm-hmm. And would you say that the importance of sustainability when you founded your company was as much as it is now in the center and topic?
Like I said, it hasn't been the same way. And because in the beginning, sustainability was more about the economics, about sustainability, because there's a link, which is, I think, a good news. There's also a link between being sustainable in terms of environment and being sustainable in terms of economy. But on the first years, let's say, that was the main concern, not so much about the planet. Today, I think we consider this urge to mitigate climate change. So perception of public, industry, authorities, even regulation have raised this to a different level. And presently, all mobility projects we work are based on sustainable propulsion, sustainable storage system, sustainable materials. But it's not only propulsion and energy storage, which, of course, it's the center of the thing and where you spend more energy and money. The materials used and the look and feel of the traveling environment has also to match with this current trend, which has to be quieter, zero emission, and more sustainable.
Mm-hmm. And would you say there was, like, looking back in history, that there was one key moment in the industry that you have observed? Was it just the mitigation of climate change? Was it the awareness about climate change and fighting it? Or would you say it already, I don't know, evolved over time to become more and more a topic that people looked at?
Interesting question. I believe it was more an evolution, yes. But I believe there is a trigger here, because even the clients that were sensitive to the impact, the environmental impact of whatever they do, sometimes they didn't risk on investing, on putting money, because they were competing with other companies that were not doing that investment. So there was a risk. The change was when regulation, European regulation, local regulation, start changing. And this came, of course, because of public pressure, government pressure. And when regulations start changing, everybody, let's say all the ecosystem, understood they had to invest if they want to keep the pace in the market. So even if there was awareness, I believe regulation here played an important role, I would say. And this was something that was more recent than in the beginning, let's say 25 years ago. There was not so much regulation towards more efficient systems.
Mm-hmm. And did you kind of see it coming that it would happen that way? I mean, you're not a magician. You can't see and look into the future. But did you, like, have a feeling that, especially also with the regulations, that they would be coming and the whole topic of sustainability would become such a central and integral part?
Well, Totini, honestly, we do not have the crystal ball. We wish we do. Maybe it wasn't so fun, but we don't have. But I believe we were quite pioneers on creating several consortia around R&D projects to work on sustainable mobility solutions. Because those kind of assignments that usually clients gave us, which was you have to have a new product like a new bus or a new train in 6 to 7 months, it's completely impossible to introduce innovation. And so we start creating this consortia for buses, aircrafts, or trains in 2005, 2006, to try to work in advance in solutions that could be sustainable for the future. And of course, what we dig in those projects sometimes took 5, 6 years to become products in the market. That's how innovation many times happened. But I believe that doing that 15 years ago was quite pioneering in this sector. Today, everybody's working on that. But 15 years ago, it was quite innovative. And I have to say that we took two conclusions from this, which is if you want really to make changes in a near future, you should have start working sooner and consider longer and bigger investments in advance. The second lesson we learned from that was that collaboration is absolutely key to make this innovation happen and to make the innovation happen faster.
Mm-hmm. So one can say that you're already 15 years ahead because you've seen it already and implemented it sooner probably than most of those that are just now starting to be sustainable, right?
Yes, we were not alone. We have, of course, several partners that have this, understanding. But it was difficult to get investment at that time. And so we decided, okay, if it's not what we can do for tomorrow morning products, we should start working on that today and believe that in 4 or 5 years, we'll have something that will really make the difference. And now these products are making the difference.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, one thing you also do is operating quite internationally. And I mean, I know for sure that sustainability is a big topic here in Europe, but would you say that looking at Europe, but also worldwide, that sustainable products are requested and really prioritized in buying? Or do you see maybe regional differences, some areas where people are more aware of the need of sustainability and other areas that aren't?
Well, I would say, it's a good question. I would say that we work mainly for Europe and Americas, let's say. And I believe that this prioritization, it's quite similar in Europe at European level, maybe because we are talking about mostly Europe Union countries. But for instance, if you think about South America, which is also a market we work on, you have other issues that come into the equation, like the infrastructure that can be a problem. And when you have, it's not the product itself by itself, it's also the ecosystem and the infrastructure. And for instance, in South America, they're, even in the United States, they have bigger problems sometimes with infrastructure, which takes, let's say, that the speed of developing products for an infrastructure that is not prepared sometimes doesn't work at the same pace as in a small country in Europe, for instance.
Yeah, for sure. And also sustainability always comes with a cost. Do you have the feeling that every and each country is really willing to pay for it? Also now thinking about South America, I mean, they're having so many other troubles or struggles. Are they really willing to pay for sustainability?
Well, I believe we all agree today that there is no turning back. So no planet B. I think that we all agree on that. But we have seen in the past that even just by changing governments, sometimes you have different mindsets. But which I think it's insane in terms of a design perspective, because the reality is the same. It's just the way you look at reality change. Of course, regulation here plays a big role on convincing the industry to invest. So if countries, if every country wants its industry to be more sustainable, which has consequences for the world and for the country itself, they have to make changes in what is regulation. And if they want to stay in the market, they have to be more, let's say, active in terms of changing the rules. By changing the rules, politicians many times have this problem, which is by changing the rules, it's not just betting in one technology and putting the investment in one technology. It should be about different technologies and different options. Diversity here is also a key to be successful in the future.
Definitely. So that would be my next question. So do you think that regulation really creates a space or the possibility to innovate? So people actually come up with better ideas if there are regulations, or do they have to come up with good ideas when we have regulations?
It's kind of a circle. I think it's a funny question also, and interesting, because I think the ideas are there. I think the capability of people to generate ideas, it already exists. The thing is, we were talking before about investments, and when people think, okay, this idea is good, but I have to invest. And if the other competitors are not investing, maybe I get behind. So it's not that I've seen that all our partners, all our clients don't want to invest in a more sustainable world. Sometimes they are afraid that the investment is so big that they get behind in relation to their partners. So and I've seen that in the past regarding reduced mobility, regarding pollution in cities, regarding the operation models, when you have someone that comes from public acceptance saying that you have to change, then definitely industry changes. So I think it's a full ecosystem, because then in the industry, you have the people and the skills of, let's say, people capable to give these solutions if there is the right investment. And I believe you have to have the right investment.
I mean, you've just mentioned that, well, some clients have the fear of getting left behind if they invest in sustainable products because it's sometimes so much more investment. How do you then really deal with that if they're not really willing or scared or afraid to do that investment that might be higher than the investment in not sustainable products?
Well, one of the things that I think designers do, it's also to anticipate future scenarios. And so we create visions. And one very powerful tool that design has is to visualize the good part or the good consequences of every act that you do. So we can help the ecosystem to envision what will be a new future with the introduction of these products. So beside the product itself, Alma Design has been working at, like I was telling you, in buses, trains, aircrafts or boats. But at the same time, we help our clients and municipalities and ecosystems to envision how the system will work in the future. And that is a better system, a more sustainable system than you have today. This is a powerful tool that design can help you and can help to, let's say, make a conversion between all the stakeholders into a same path, into a same vision of the future.
So you're really into drawing the bigger picture and also showing
your clients.
Yes, bigger
picture. You're better than me. Yes.
Yeah. So I would also like to kind of go deeper into sustainable products because I mean, we've talked a lot now about sustainability and I think we all agree that we need more sustainable products. But what would you say are really sustainable products when looking at the bus sector and the bus industry?
Well, like for any mobility product or service, a sustainable product is one that should be sustainable. From manufacturing and raw materials, material, energy, and so on, to the operation part and usage, let's say energy storage, propulsion, energy consumption, maintenance need, replacement of components, but also at the end of the life cycle, meaning reuse, recycled materials. And in summary, it has to be thought from scratch to be reused, to reduce the amount of, let's say, raw materials and stuff you are putting in the product, and recyclable. This has to be thought in a holistic way through every stage of its life cycle. And this applies to buses, of course, but also to every mobility product. It's a very complex equation and you have to be taught in terms of each step where you can make a difference and how you can make a difference.
Mm-hmm. So I clearly hear that not everyone can be a product designer because there's so many parts that are complex about it. And how do you start such a design process? If you say, okay, a client comes and says, I want that and that product, how do you start designing, and especially with sustainability in mind? Because you have to, for one, be very detailed, but at the same time also have the bigger picture and look. How do you then start?
It's interesting. One of the things that I support a lot is that designers have a background on sustainable design in most places. Well, they should have. But this should be work from the beginning. Let's say at the very beginning of the process. I strongly support the fact that designers should be involved since project definition and since project requirements. Because therefore they can bring this, let's say, eco design thinking from the first moment. And as I said before, Totinia, the environmental impact of a simple, small wrong decision can have huge consequences in the future projects, production, and so on. Think about that. Just the thickness of a small part that you are producing can have consequences in terms of amount of material, amount of weight that's going to be used and is going to be carried out through the life of the product. And so you can start from the beginning involving designers and having an eco-design perspective to achieve big improvements at all the stages of the process. and of course, involve at those requirement stages passengers, operators, and drivers. Let me push the thing to my side. The design thinking approach, which is now well known worldwide and that we practice at Talma Design, brings these passengers, operators, drivers, industry opinion since the first moment that you are designing a new product. And we have to do that if we really want to innovate.
Thank you so much for giving us insights on that, the whole design thinking process. I think it's, I think everyone heard it. And I think, especially throughout the last years, it has become, more an integral part of really designing and just thinking. So I also know, Rui, that you are a professor in transport design and that you're really into teaching also the design thinking process, but also sustainability to the next generation. So how would you maybe describe the next generation, the upcoming designers? It seems sometimes like they have sustainability in their genes, but is it true? What are your observations really as a transport design professor?
Well, thank you for asking, Tatiana. Answering to your first question, yes, young people are much more aware of this sustainable factor today. I did an internal survey at University of Lisbon and to the students of in the Master of Product Design, and climate change came as concern number one for all, let's say, generation in people that were present. So this was for me also a confirmation of what I already expected. But acting in a more sustainable way is something I had to transmit to my team, but also at the university. And this is something, in my opinion, that has to be taught through all the steps of the process. So it's not something that comes only by intuition. The first thing is, and this is something I also do both at the studio and at university, is that before starting to create something new, the first thing people should ask, being it a bus or other transportation system, is, are we improving in something in terms of customer needs or sustainability? If not, why are we creating something new? Investment has to take innovation and improvement in sustainability at the center of each decision. Otherwise, just creating something new, spending energy on molds, parts, engineering, without improving the world, the needs of the people and the environment, then you should stop. If you think you can add something to the world, to the ecosystem, to the environment, yes, then you should invest. That's the first, I think, thought you have to do before starting to produce something new.
Mm-hmm. And do you feel that when you teach that, especially as you just said, okay, we need to improve a product, that the students are willing to hear that? Or are they like, no, I really want, that's why I'm a designer. I want to design no matter if I see improvement or not. Or is it something that they say, yes, of course, we need improvement. Otherwise, it's maybe also not sustainable in the long term.
Well, you have all kind of students, of course, as you might imagine. But I strongly support that design is about, you know, this is theoretical form and function. And what we do at Talma, what I teach at university, is linking form with function. Otherwise, I think it's what I call style or an artistic impression. And if you want to link form and function, then you have to understand the ways and tools to make it happen. Tatiana, I think you might agree with me. There is a lot of misunderstanding in things that people think they are sustainable, and in reality, they are not. So if you waste more energy, for instance, and pollute, create more pollution to produce a product, a lighter product, then the amount of energy you're saving when putting it to work, it means it's not sustainable in the end. So there's a full equation that has to be considered. And designers and engineers, of course, have to be taught to understand this full life cycle of the process. And how does it impact the overall ecosystem? It's not only by just saying we are using natural raw material that in the end you know that you are having a more sustainable product. It's the full equation that has to be taken. So they have the awareness, they want to make a difference, and they have to understand the tools they could integrate in their designs to make them more sustainable.
Mm-hmm. And do you have the feeling that there are enough tools being taught to the students in order to really be able to have this whole circular and holistic view? Or would you say that there's still maybe things missing in the curriculum? They can even implement it better.
It's a good question. At the University of Lisbon, we have even a subject that is called sustainability of products and services. To be honest, if you want to understand everything and all areas that can impact on the sustainability of a product, this could not be resumed into a single subject, let's say. It's much wider and, as you say, much more holistic. But at least if you have, one matter and one focus on this subject, then you can disseminate it on other projects that you are working on and bring that knowledge to every product we design, for instance, at the master at university. I think this has to become something so compulsory on any curricula as ergonomy is, as inclusive design is. So it has to be there in the core, not only having a subject on this, but something that should spread on every act and on every exercise that we do, being it on university, being it at the design studio.
Mm-hmm. Sounds very good and also very complex. Would you say that maybe those young designers, the next generation of designers, are really an advantage when coming to companies? Because as we have discussed it, they're so much more focusing on sustainability that companies can really, I'll have an advantage from them joining.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. I believe that even when I started my company 25 years ago, and I was saying the first 10, the understanding of the role of the designer inside the company, which was much far from the real purpose than it is today. So today, I believe that the company itself understands much more the engagement of design and managing design inside. And of course, likewise, they understand much more the role of the designer acting as a leverage for eco design, much more than it used to be before.
Thank you so much, Rui, for all your insights on sustainability. I have the feeling, or I know, that you're really an expert due to all the years of experience that you bring and also the projects that you have implemented. We're now closely coming to an end, and I think all our listeners have heard that you're really an expert when it comes to sustainability. But what would you advise those listening that actually want to act more sustainable in the bus sector? Is there one thing, one statement, or one advice you would give them?
So first of all, I think you should remember that it takes time from design to product, and you have to consider that time. Time means investment. Second, cooperate with others and involve all stakeholders to address all items at the very beginning of the process. The third, involve sustainable solutions and sustainable approach through design thinking. Since the first moment you start thinking about a new bus, about a new mobility product. And finally, believe and use designer as a trigger to foster more innovative and more sustainable products, creating a vision for a better world.
This sounds incredible good. Thank you so much, Rio, for all your insights, for your time. We say a big thank you to you as our guest, and we thank all our listeners for listening, and hear you very soon for the next episode of Bus to Talk.
It was a big pleasure to participate.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
A big thank you to our guest. And so we close another episode of the fourth season of Bus to Bus. Stay tuned and don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. More information can be found on our show note. We also invite you to have a look at our website, www.bus2bus.berlin. There you will find all information about Bus to Bus, as well as our newsroom with industry insights and previous podcast recordings. See you soon, and our tip, try the bus.